Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. My broadcast is titled World Watchers, and it is program number 691, March the 4th, 1985. I number these broadcasts and date them because the information that I use on the broadcast, the sources of it, is available if you send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I supply you with the way you can look into these materials yourself. They are, I agree, very controversial. Many of you are familiar with the fact that the FBI made a report on me in 1967. I've had it on the air a few times, but new listeners may not know it. It had to do with my being afraid of fascism. They stated that they had to form a file on me and begin following or whatever they do or whatever I write about. I wasn't writing in those days, but they sent messages to the State Department, Secret Service, and interdepartments to be aware of Mae Brussel because of two reasons. One, she's afraid of fascism, and two, because she even they said, stated it publicly. Well, today, this week, in the past week, I have seen more fascism in the press and in the news, and as Ronald Reagan said when he was elected, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's galloping along and very frightening, and I'll share some of those things that I saw and with you and try to interpret just what the implications are. They're pretty bad. I was going through the Freedom of Information file I have in my study to get that one report they did in 1967 and came across one sheet they returned to me, which I don't even remember ever seeing, dated December the 29th, 1972. And it has to do with the FBI, the acting director of the FBI, sending a message to San Francisco. Of course, that was J. Edgar Hoover in those days, regarding the conspiracy newsletter, an underground publication. And they wanted to find out if Paul Krasner and I had gotten out that newsletter yet. He was taking ads for it by December 72. My Watergate story came out in August of 72 in The Realist. So the FBI went to the publisher on Post Street of The Realist, and they didn't find anything like a conspiracy newsletter. And evidently they got in touch with Paul Krasner, and they said Krasner advised that the publication of the conspiracy newsletter has been delayed indefinitely. He advised that both he and Mae Brussel, who would be the editor of the publication, currently do not have time to work on it. In view of the above, the matter is being closed. However, the San Francisco FBI will remain alert for possible future publications of conspiracy newsletter. That was 13 years ago. I hope they're sitting on the edge of their chair. I wonder if they know that we switched from a newsletter to a radio program that's been on the air 14 years. When that, I was already on the air a year from 1971 when the FBI was looking for a newsletter in San Francisco. And I started on KLRB in those days and now our news and have had ever since. And they were looking for a printed sheet while I was doing my radio time. NBC this morning, March the 4th, had a interview with Dr. Spock and a new co-author that's going to be working with him, a Dr. Rothenberg, fairly middle-aged man. And he was talking about the new edition of his book. And he said when the first book came out, he put his feelings about atomic war and the politics of baby care in the middle of the book, and nobody paid attention to it. So now it's in the introduction or the beginning of the book. And he said something that I have known for a long time, and you younger people out there who have families should be aware of this, if you are not yet. He said parents have to be more political to take care of their kids. And that isn't just the formula and the diapers or thumb sucking or chicken pox and all those things or orthodonture. You have to be more political. And he said that he had sold 30 million books of his book on baby care. Can you imagine if 15 million mothers, forget the fathers, it's Women's Week this week, 15 million mothers had gone out and opposed the nuclear arms as they were building up. Now they are sent all over the world and ready to be shot off. They've been deployed to the proper places. 30 million books, and people put aside what Dr. Spock was saying about the politics. You can't separate. There's no way you can separate a child. Once you give birth to it, you can't separate its world from its body. You can take the best care of its body. You can't take care of that world as a thing that doesn't exist. It exists side by side. That's how I got into my work after I had 5 children and realized that all the things that they had, the lessons, the clothing, the education, the special schools, all the privileges, that wasn't enough. I have to find out the milieu in which they were born and where their future or no future exists and face it as it is, not as I want it to be, but as it is. And Dr. Spock's warning, if it had been heeded and people really cared about those children they gave birth to, simultaneously they would be working for peace and for no atomic bombs while they are raising these children. It's one thing to oppose the war in Vietnam, but when the war was over, the anti-political interest, it melted away and nobody cared. After Kent State, nobody cared. The bulk of the people that were out and visible about caring about their world faded into the landscape, and now wear that insulting title of a yuppie. It's really a disgrace. Now, also on NBC News, and it was in the New York Times this week, I understand on Friday, is an article about George Bush going to the Sudan, accompanied by Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson. Whether you're aware of it or not, this is one of the gross separations of state being diminished totally. The Vice President of the United States should represent the USA, period. Pat Robertson, as the Christian Broadcasting, is a very political animal. He got his start as a friend and maybe roommate at Yale with J. Peter Grace. Grace represents the Vatican, the Catholic Church, as a Knight of Malta, the head of the Knight of Malta in the United States. And he put up the know-how or the funds or encouragement for Pat Robertson. And Mr. Wyrick of the far right, also a strong Catholic, put up the money for Jerry Falwell's moral majority, the Vatican behind the two of them, and George Bush, a Catholic and a Knight of Malta. Now, just a few weeks ago, I talked about Prescott Bush, and I'm going to be doing more in a few more weeks on this subject. The story of the AmeriCares Foundation, that was a December 27th story, 1984, in the Chronicle and in the Washington Post. Prescott Bush with J. Peter Grace and their Knights of Malta going down to Central America involved with the CIA, the Defense Department, acting as humanitarians with a capital H, and having been a part of military coups, overthrowing countries, using church as a guise, the links of Prescott are bad enough and shocking into a political arena where 40 and 50,000 people have been killed in those countries by death squads, 40,000 Nicaragua, 50,000 El Salvador, and having the vice president not going on official capacity to the Sudan. Now, what they do is he offers the government arms and military care to get themselves back on their bootstraps. A few weeks ago, the president took away the money from Sudan. Now he sends George Bush with the two religious leaders representing, literally starting with the Vatican, to the Sudan and saying, first we'll take it away, the carrot and stick, now we'll give it back, and then taking the masses, we'll build missionaries, turn you to Christians, feed you if you join the flock, and become good anti-communists, Christian anti-communists, which is a very much a part of the CIA manual. They're told that they're doing this for the Christian church, written in a country where there should be separation of state and church. And I'll do a little bit more on that Christian part of the manual. I have that manual, and a subscriber to the broadcast sent me an article in a publication emphasizing this point. So the separation of church and state completely melts away, and there are overt signs of the fascism that I was afraid of in 67 that are creeping along. Now, I mentioned before, I think I mentioned on the air, I don't remember, the book Eva Evita, The Life and Death of Evita Perón, and I'm going to be referring to it over and over again, and I've done past broadcasts on Eva Perón, her money, how she took this trip to Europe to the Vatican and Franco. She gets to France and has this mysterious disease and dies of cancer. Then her money is unleashed, the Nazi money that was put there, Vatican giving passports with the United States Army, not just the Vatican, the United States Army, to top Nazis, and Nazi gold and artifacts and diamonds, sold it into Swiss banks in her name. And then when she died in 1952, like a time bomb, that money is released to begin the World Nazi Movement, The Resurgence of the Nazi Movement. Now, in the book, Evita, The Life and Death of Evita Perón, it mentions, after Eva died, Juan Perón turned to unparalleled lechery, spending $20 million of government funds, and I might have mentioned this before to you, on his own purposes and for youth groups that were not, of course, clearly defined. But in 1973, there were wild swings on the international gold market. There was speculation in the financial press of the liquidation of $800 million in Eva's illicit Swiss assets. And as I say, I'm going to bring this book up again, but I want to mention that briefly. Because in the book, O Vatican, that just came out in 1984, written by Paul Hoffman, he, on page 251, he talks about a man who worked for German intelligence and also works for the CIA, Hans Langemann, and the allegations of the Vatican working with the CIA in spy rings in the 1950s or 1960s. Then he goes up to another period, and he says John Paul II, Secretary of State, Cardinal Casaroli, was particularly upset by the report in the West German magazine that had copies of documents that were taken from the Curia and that were made for Mr. Langemann on this point. And it said, they went on to say, the espionage network that was presented in later years of this particular network that linked to the Vatican, that they referred to in the press, was called Operation Eva. And I wonder what, this book is called Eva Evita, and a lot of money was sprung in that time period, and I wonder if it went into the Christian broadcasting, all of them, all the main figures of the broadcasting, all of a sudden got unlimited time, unlimited money, unlimited funds for publications, unlimited colleges are starting. They have their own press reporters, the School of Journalism, so they can carry the news for the new order. They have their own medical schools and doctors who can do the autopsies and the medical care. The Christian colleges, in a time where this country didn't have such a great influx of profits from just being a Christian, where did they develop all that money? And George Bush, as director of the CIA, was flowing in like $18, $20 billion of funds. And when Reagan became president, he said, I want to reactivate the role of the church and the priests as a cover and journalist for the intelligence community, which they've been doing all along through the World Council, Christian churches, and sanctuaries for assassins and gunmen. But it's very important to know that this same Christian broadcasting and Mr. Roberts, who's down there in the Sudan with George Bush, was a big supporter in Guatemala of Rios Montt, the terrorist who was kicked out but who's very active. They've supported the death squads in El Salvador, and all the fascist regimes and the TV evangelists have become very important. Pat Robertson's 700 Club features Gene Kirkpatrick, Senator Jeremiah Denton, Congressman Jerry Solomon, Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger is the darling of this group. Don't ever think, and they publish these little stories, that he might be a leftist. He is very much part of the entire TV evangelist Vatican network, and they are very political, Pat Robertson, if you watch him all the time. But when they leave the church and pulpit and accompany the vice president of the United States, who was the CIA director, then the government agencies can flow through the churches and down to lower levels and keep the death squads in power, which they seem to be doing, or opposing any changes or land reforms. And now the latest trip is into Africa. They've been there a long time, but it's just, for me, it's shocking to see George Bush traveling this way. The media had a lot of stories this past week that we've been carrying on World Watches for a long, long time. One, of course, was Reverend Gale. Newsweek had a long article, large article about him, the Christian Defense League. And there was a 20-minute segment on NBC and the Nazis and the Klan. And Reverend Gale not hiding what he's doing and warning about May Day coming. Be careful of May Day. The news has been filled with Joseph Mengele, and I've been trying for the past 2 years to smoke him out with certain links of where I was told he was and who he was dealing with. And, of course, the Mafia Roundup, and I'll do more on that maybe next week. Of the top five crime bosses that were pulled in, Roy Cohn represented one of the major families, one of the men that was arrested, and that was the Genovese, the member of the Genovese family, the head of it. And I have done many broadcasts on Raymond Donovan and his connections to Genovese and Jimmy Hoffa, and also Vito Genovese with Jack Ruby down in Dallas and with the United States military in the same room, a general in the same room, and also on Roy Cohn being on the board of Western Goals with their computers into the police departments around the country of law-abiding citizens, feeding into their computers the attorney for one of the five big mafia chieftains in New York City that covers coast to coast and around the world where their traffic is involved, and having computers into the police department, and also being mentioned in the nomenclature of assassination cabal and his links to the people who killed John Kennedy. Many of the things that I've had for 14 years are coming to a head now and are interrelated. You can only do so much in an hour a week, but you can't help but notice them. Now, when I heard about the NBC show on the Christian Defense League, I wanted to call the person and tell them about Reverend Gale and his links to Clay Shaw and the Kennedy assassination. I called NBC New York and asked if I could have the news person who put that program on, and the woman who answered it said, "We didn't have that on the show this morning." And I said, "Yes, you did. A friend of mine saw it." And she says, paused a minute, when she said, "No, we didn't have anything about the Christian Defense League or the Nazis." I said, "A friend of mine taped the broadcast." Then she said, "Oh, yes, call Carol Marin in Chicago," and gave me a number, and nobody answered the number. But at NBC in New York, it didn't happen for all practical purposes. Now, I have the address for you of the Turner Diary. This is I've had on the air many times. This is the blueprint for the overthrow of the United States. It's the Mein Kampf of all of these various people who, again, link down to Joseph Mengele and to the various elements I've been talking about. The address for this book was published in a newsletter, a journal that I had got, in care of National Alliance Books. It was published in Soldier of Fortune magazine, which is worse, put out by Robert Brown, who I have linked and written about with his relationship to Reverend Gale and the Aryan Nations and the Christian Defense League. Turner Diaries, in care of National Alliance Books, Department S, Box 3535, Washington, D.C., 20007. If you didn't get that, you can write me a self-addressed stamp letter, P.O. Box 22351511, Carmel 93922. The National Alliance Book. Now, in The Soldier of Fortune, it gives Andrew McDonald, a nuclear physicist, as the author. The author was William Pierce, who worked at United Technology and had a defense contract from the Air Force for $37,000, and his name is not McDonald. For some reason or other, they sanitized it. They made him a nuclear physicist, where the other one worked for the same company that Alexander Haig became president of a few years later, United Technology. And I don't suppose he just became president overnight. I suppose he had some contact. So the Reverend Gale, who was in the news finally, has been identified, and you can always say you heard it first on World Watchers program or tape broadcast. His links to the Gale, to William Pierce, to Edgar Eugene Bradley, to Edwin Meese and Ronald Reagan, and Clay Shaw and the murder of John Kennedy. I won't go over that for you. I have it on other broadcasts, but that is an important item that is finally getting some attention. Not the connecting links. That's the part that we have to alert to public officials or journalists that there are connections between these people. As a friend said to me the other day, in journalism you learn to do a single story. You're not supposed to make connections. Well, I break the rules and I make the connections. Now, regarding the Mengele link to the drug trafficking and the CIA documents that were in front page New York Times, and mentioning his being with Martin Bormann, that opened a whole can of worms because, as I mentioned before, the Simon Wiesenthal Center has said that they never could find Mengele or bring him in or didn't know what he was doing, and that Bormann was dead. And I got a telephone call from one well-known author who got an offer for a book on Mengele, and he wanted me to send me my material on Mengele, and I told him what it was, but he's affiliated with the Wiesenthal Center, and I wouldn't send material there to them. Then another author who's well known called me this week. He wanted to know about Joseph Mengele, and I told him the very things I've had on this program for the past 2 years, and the links to DeLorean's money and to Martin Bormann in South America and the attorney and where the city where the money was deposited, and I ran that down, and this particular author was very excited. Somebody wanted to put up money for a book on these connections. He called me back later, and he was at the Wiesenthal Center, of course. And then the subject came up about how much they would do. And I don't want to work with those people for reasons I've told you. And I got an admission, I don't have to say the name of the person, that what they do, this is how Simon Wiesenthal works. This is sort of how, like, Mark Lane works, how they handle these big stories. Wiesenthal's offering $1 million to bring in Joseph Mengele. What they want to get their hands on Mengele, and like Klaus Barbie, they're willing to put him in a little room and isolate him so that you don't have access to him. But if you were ever to try him, you'd only bring in the people from Auschwitz that he affected. In other words, you narrow the investigation down, but you don't ask who got you out of Europe, who accompanied you out of Europe, although I have information how to locate one of the people that did now. But you only ask the question, did he torture people or kill people? Not how did you survive and who kept you company these past years. So the Wiesenthal Center wants $1 million. They've offered $1 million if you catch him. But if they get him, they can't ask the question. So I prefer not to be affiliated in any way or to answer questions. But what I did do, not knowing that this first party, this author, was working with somebody who offered to put up money for a book, if he got the information, it's like pumping me for the names. I gave them the names, and they clinked. They made sense to them. There were certain names that they heard or knew, and they were going to pursue. But I assure you, it will be buried. It will not develop in the way that I've developed it for you on these broadcasts. And that's why it's so important to take these every week to learn how they cover up. You know, if people had information on the assassination of John Kennedy, if they had anything that went off the grass, Mark Lane didn't want to know it. It was a grassy knoll. He used it and put it in his material or lectures. But outside that, you weren't supposed to know anything. I did mention that Reverend Moon was tied into Mr. Stroessner, General Stroessner, and the operation of Mengele down in South America. There's a story in the San Francisco Chronicle, February 18th, 1984. In Paraguay, the Moon Church has some access, closely associating itself with the government of General Alfred Stroessner through one of the general's confidants, Juan Manuel Frutos, president of the Anti-Communist League, which is the World Anti-Communist League, which goes back to John Singlaub and the Los Angeles Police Department, a lot of little areas that I'll be updating and making more clear for you later on. Now, in addition to that plane crash that left out of Paraguay to Bolivia, just when they were looking for Joseph Mengele, there was another plane crash February the 20th, 1985. 148 are killed as a Spanish jet hits the mountain. Now, the accounts of this crash were that the pilot didn't have access to a radio tower that he should have had. It wasn't on his map. And the New York Times has a story, King Juan Carlos and Prime Minister Felipe Gonzalez sent sympathy messages to relatives of the victims and also to the president of Hernan Siles Suazo of Bolivia. So there were admittedly three or more Bolivians on the airplane that crashed that got the condolences of the president of Spain and the prime minister of Spain. But what did they know if Mengele traveled back and forth, and also Klaus Barbie? What did they know, or could they know anything about the cocaine traffic that that's being exposed now? Because people are closing in now at various levels. There's a lot of good investigators who want to get a piece of this story, and they're not afraid to go into it. It's when you get to the top that the door is slammed and the lid is closed. But in the meantime, you can find a lot of little pieces if you look for them. There's nothing conclusive in that plane crash, but it seems strange at the time, the circumstances of it, and then the letter of condolences to Bolivia. Meanwhile, sitting in his jail in France, Klaus Barbie has been trying to arrange the seizure of power down in Bolivia. There's a story, August 11th, 1984, that Ted Rubenstein had sent to me from the Seattle Times. The Bolivian government presented two jailed Nazis at a news conference and said Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie had instructed them to organize paramilitary groups down there, the Nazis, and seize power. The suspects, Alvaro de Castro and Emilio Carboni, an Italian who's lived in Bolivia since 1978, didn't talk to journalists. They said that Mendez, they spoke to only in response to a question by Juan Mendez, the intelligence chief of the Interior Department, and they said they were instructed to help overthrow the current government because Klaus Barbie is instructing them from their jail cell. Now, just this past week, there was a long, another front-page story of the New York Times. Barbie trial due this year, likely to be narrow in scope. Now, there you go again. He can't see anybody. Nobody can get to him. And they're going to put it down to what did he do to the children in the orphanage. They've warned you ahead of time. Nothing about what went on, you know, from the time the war was over. He can't use that as his defense now. So he can't, his attorney was going to bring in the members of the resistance who worked with the Nazis. Now the judge has the right to reduce the scope of the trial to did he send the children to be killed, period. And that eliminates opening up a sore on the anniversary, 40th anniversary of the end of the war by bringing in a lot of otherwise, in quotes, good people who were actually good Nazis. That is very important because in the so-called left or liberal circle that is around us all the time, there are always agents and double agents passing themselves off as friends, as informers working for this same echelon and appearing to be liberal. And when the truth is out on this about this country, since the 60s at least, going on up now till 1984 and beyond, 85, into this era, there are, maybe they've tripled or quadrupled the amount of agents that you assume that are working on your side but are doing everything to deflect the information from getting out. That doesn't mean you have to be paranoid. It has to be that you're aware of it. Now, the same day, there was a news story in San Francisco Chronicle, and a tiny one, that New York Times story, Klaus Barbie foils attempt to poison him. Accused Nazi war criminal Klaus Barbie was given an acid substance instead of the regular medication in an apparent assassination attempt. He spat out the poison before swallowing it. He's in no danger. He's in an isolated cell. It was an acidic substance. It was not a medical mistake. It was an apparent assassination attempt. He's supposed to stand trial, and they're stalling this. Now, if there is this connection of Mengele and Barbie, and even going to the possibility that John DeLorean, they have to get those two Nazis off because DeLorean's out free, and you can cover up his bases or the connections. But what a horrendous story if there's a thread of truth in that connection, and I have reason to believe that there is, and even down, I understand, the Wiesenthal Center names made sense, and they're doing a little bit of investigation. I don't know what they'll do. The New Times from the Soviet Union has a story, Barbie Carries On, and it says, even behind bars, 2 years have passed, he hasn't gone to trial, and now he's working with the neo-fascists down in Bolivia, and he's telling them to have a coup to get rid of the president of Bolivia and giving instructions from his cell on how to overthrow the government that sent him for trial so that Bolivia can get back into the cocaine business, which is one of the main means of their support to wipe out the debt. And the Oregonian, December 25th, has a story. Attorney of Klaus Barbie contends the aging Nazi will never be tried. They're working hard on this story, on keeping this story from getting out, and Mr. Vargas, his attorney, doesn't think, according to this story, Jack Verg, V-E-R-G-E-S, it's pronounced, doesn't think he'll go to trial. He's been sitting on it. He's the one who wants to bring out the fact in his defense that he worked with all these other people, even at the time the orphans were killed, which is pertinent to the subject, actually, if he can bring it in, that he wasn't the only Nazi transporting them, but a lot of other people looked the other way or allowed it or were a part of it and were passing themselves off as the French resistance. Now, at the Richard Allen hosted a party down in Dallas, Texas at the time of the GOP convention. And among the guests that he had, he's starting an organization called International Republican Cooperation Fund. This is the former head of our National Security Council. He entertained the former president of Bolivia. And this article, one article I have, says that after overthrowing the democratically elected government of Bolivia in 1971, General Banzar ruled while the country was converted into the world's largest producer of cocaine paste. He was ousted in 1980. The president elected to succeed him, Hernan Siles Zuazo, Z-U-A-Z-O, has led a courageous fight against the drug mafia, which continues to hide behind Banzer as their protector. So the GOP entertains a man who soon will be back in power again, as well as other people from drug countries where most of the drug is coming from. I'll take a one-minute break now and get back on this subject and some other very frightening things, I think they are.